Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh! Let him play!
I agree.
Their second best player is Nervis Solarte. I mean, come on.
Solarte.
They are...
Never nervous. Yang Hervis. City is dead. The stadium is dead. And then an hour later, I'm horned. Yankee Magic. I'm running through walls.
As we always say, you know, the board is the board.
It's the truth.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big playoff show. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios in sunny Southern California. Not so sunny for a lot of teams in the NBA right now, in what has been blowout week in the NBA playoffs. So we're going to recap some series that have gone away and trying to see if there's any juice in this semifinal round of the NBA playoffs. I mean, it's going to take a lot for some of these teams, and I think it's over for a couple others, but we'll look at them one by one and get to you right there with the latest. And that's pretty much it tonight. When we finish our program tonight, we're still going to have a couple of games left to decide. We will have several series left to decide. And as it turns out, every series is still in play, although one could be over by the time we finish the program, which is recording on a Tuesday night. The Celtics game is over at the Sixers. The Cavs are currently playing the Toronto Raptors in Cleveland as we start this program tonight. And two other series to be decided tomorrow. Both of those way out of hand. So as we get into it, as we set you up for the remaining games of this round, we may even look ahead to the next round because these series are looking pretty decisive. So no better way to move on to the next one, as they say, than to give you some recaps with our co-host Chris. Let's jump it. The NBA report for May the 7th. The Pistons let go of Stan Van Gundy after several years with the team. I get the rumbling that Van Gundy wanted to assume greater operations on the GM side, but the team was not having it, so they go their separate ways. Now, let's get back to the playoffs. The Celtics were up 3-0 over the Sixers in their series, but they lost tonight as we start our program. Very dubiously officiated game. More details on that coming up. But the lead at this point is 3-1. The Celtics leading with a chance to go home for game 5. That's in a couple days. The Cavs lead the Raptors 3-0. Oh, we got things to say about that. Game 4 is in progress. The Cavs are up in that game as well by a pretty comfortable margin. Well, it was a comfortable margin. Now they're up by 6 as we near the end of the first quarter. More on that later. In the West, the Rockets lead the Jazz 3-1. The Warriors lead the Pelicans 3-1. Both of those series will resume on Tuesday night. And that's the latest from the NBA playoffs. So let's bring in Chris back to the program to break down what have been not nearly as good a batch of series as we had in the first round. And so all those guys that were hanging on and saying, we'll just wait till the second round to watch the NBA playoffs. Well, they may have missed out because this round is not anywhere nearly as good as the previous round. But there is one exception, and it's a series that is at this point 3-1. Celtics and Sixers, it might be a 3-1 series advantage, but 3 out of the 4 games have been pretty good, including tonight's game. Although I may put the good designation into question just because the officiating really was very underwhelming in tonight's game. And I hate that about the NBA, but rather than I talk about it, let's get our friend Chris to join us again for this week's report. Chris, welcome back. How's it going tonight?
Good. Thanks, Dave. It's so funny you mentioned that about how the second round has been disappointing. I've seen about that today, and we were kind of building it up like, well, the first round's been great, and the second round, it's just going to be better. And so far, you're right. It's been kind of for the most part, these series have been one-sided. A lot of games have been one-sided. And you're right again about that Celtics Sixers series being the best of the batch, in my opinion. In that the games, for the most part, have been close. Game one, the Celtics won by 16. They just blew them out. But yeah, 2-3. I felt like the Celtics stole those two games. And then tonight's game, it was 10, but it felt closer than that. Even though the Sixers did win by 10, but yeah, out of the four series, by far this has been the most entertaining and been the best. Hopefully, can Toronto. I have the Toronto game. Hopefully, they close the gap a little bit. Hopefully, they can show you something and at least look like a one seed one of these games. You know, I mean, it's just it's such a disappointment.
Oh man, I'm not going to get to that series first, even though it's the one in progress as we start our show. I'm not doing that because I need a little bit of time to accumulate the thoughts on what an absolute fail the Raptors have been as a one seed. I mean, they did not represent the one seed well at all. And but I first want to get to the Celtics series because, number one, it's your team, and I think it's a good opportunity to chat about a game that just ended. And two, it's actually been the best series, even though it's 3-1. And if the refs had let them play, and I'm sure you'll have some thoughts on that coming up, but if they let them play here in Game 4 and the Celtics went on to win the game, this would have been the greatest four-game sweep in the history of the NBA. I'm serious. Like, it was three out of the four games would have been really good games. But it just wound up going one team's favor in most of them. In all of them, if that were to occur. So many missed opportunities for the Sixers even before Game 4 tonight. They had the game pretty much in hand, and then they turned the ball over with less than 20 seconds, and the Celtics took the lead. And if that's how that game ended, that would have been a miserable, miserable way to finish a game. But the Sixers did force overtime, which was a wild, wild Game 3 in Philadelphia. The confetti came down because the idiot operator of the stadium had no idea that that was only a two-pointer, so he threw out the confetti thinking the Sixers won the game with a three. Not the case. They went to overtime and the Celtics won anyway, which pretty much almost would be karma for jumping the gun with those fireworks and celebratory decorations. Anyway, that was that game. Game two, like you said, the Sixers were up 22 points with only about 3 minutes. Was it three or six? Well, either way, six. Even if it was six minutes to go in the second quarter, Celtics cut the lead to 4 points at halftime and then went on and took the lead within the third quarter. And then it was back and forth, and the Celtics went on to win that game. So I think you're right. Some of those games the Celtics stole. And really, to add to that point, the 76ers were favored in the last three games. And if I remember correctly, they were even favored by as many as seven games in Game 2, which was in Boston. They were favored by seven in Game 3. They're definitely favored by seven tonight. What that says to me is that the NBA, is that the odds makers believe that the Sixers really do have a pretty sizable talent advantage on paper. And I think if the Sixers were to take this momentum and somehow win a Game 5 on the Celtics floor, and let's just hope that happens without any officiating help, then it could get really interesting because, maybe this is a way of the series balancing out. But I did not appreciate how the NBA tried to force the issue with sending the worst ref basically available to do this game. It was a bad job. So certainly a lot to think about. And Chris, I give it to you now for your thoughts on the series.
Yeah, I think games two and three were classics. I mean, just absolute classics. And particularly game three, because there was so much drama. There were times where I felt, game two was the game that Jaylen Brown came back and was sort of limited in minutes. And then game three, they got in real trouble, the Celtics, that is, because because Marcus Smart had fouled out, and Brown again was in at his minutes limit. And then in overtime, I mean, overtime was bananas because you had Smart out, you had Jaylen out, and Barry Larkin's son Shane Larkin was playing a lot of minutes in overtime, which was not good for my overall health. And I was really sweating it because he is the definition of a replacement level player. He might even be worse than that. And he played most of overtime, if I'm not mistaken. And it was very dramatic, as you pointed out. In regulation, the Celtics were down by two. They scored about 4 points. Jaylen Brown scored two baskets within, I want to say, about a 24-second period to go up by two. And then Bellinelli hits his with 1.7 seconds. They inbound the ball to Bellinelli. Rozier slipped on the floor. He might have taken a little shove there and couldn't get out to guard Bellinelli in the corner. Bellinelli was about 8 inches short of hitting a three, which would have won the game. It was a two. The confetti guy in Philly was a little overzealous, thought it was a three, I guess. I don't know. And there's confetti on the floor. Game's going in overtime. There's about a seven-minute delay. And then in overtime is crazy because, again, as I pointed out, Smart had already fouled out. So you're already down, you know, basically two big guards in – well, three if you consider Kyrie, Jaylen Brown, and Marcus Smart are all out of the game. So that's why Shane Larkin's in there. Philly scored the first 5 points of overtime. And I swear I thought the Seas were done. I really did. And they came back. It was very, very exciting. Sixers were a little careless with the ball, to be honest. And to cap it off, Simmons threw on an inbound, down one, threw a very lazy pass, in my opinion, to inbound the ball to Embiid, and Horford just got one hand on it, and he was taking it the other way, and then they ended up fouling him. He had both free throws there, and then Cavs made one last attempt. I think it was Bellinelli again from three to try to tie it. Actually, it was a pretty good shot for, I mean, it almost, you know, it wasn't totally off. I mean, for a desperation heave about 5 feet beyond the three-point arc, it was pretty close, but the Celtics held on to win. So it was a very exciting game. Like I said, the Sixers were pretty sloppy, though. There were some really awful turnovers. Redick had one. The one by Simmons, I think, was inexcusable on the inbound. And just an exciting game. It was fantastic. It was really a classic. I mean, Al Horford stealing the ball is one I'll remember forever. And and then tonight's game was a little rough. I didn't see the end. I had to put my kids to bed, and so I will go back and watch it. But as I point out, the Sixers won by 10, and it wasn't. It's probably a little closer than that. I wasn't happy with the officiating. I thought the Seas were getting roughed up when they were going to the hoop. And there were a few plays I thought were ridiculous. It was a really bad missed goaltending call on Embiid where, I mean, you know, I pointed out to you, Dave, when TBS is saying, oh, maybe this is goaltending and the refs don't call it, it's probably a bad call. So, but I don't want to focus too much on that. Give the Sixers credit. They came back. They won. Series goes back to Boston for game five, which I hope wouldn't happen, but here we are. And hopefully Boston can take it. I'll tell you, though, I'm still like, and I told you this earlier, I was very nervous about this series, and I assume the Sixers will win tonight. So yeah, that's where we are. It's been fun, though. It's been a really great series. The Celtics, the thing I haven't mentioned, the Celtics have done a great job on Simmons in particular. He was, I mean, awful in the first three games, in my opinion. And Embiid to a lesser extent. And I think, you know, it's just credit to Stevens. He's just done a really good job in game planning and just taking the Sixers out of their element. And to the point where Brett's Brown, you know, he started, I mean, he didn't take Simmons out, but he started TJ McConnell. Yeah. Who am I missing? The other guard. Sorry, I'm just drawing a blank right now. It'll come to me.
Which guard are you speaking of?
Covington.
Oh, Covington. Yeah.
Covington was what came off the bench. And Covington has been bad. I mean, let's face it, he's been really bad. So it made a lot of sense. And McConnell, in fairness, gave him a nice little spark. He had a nice game tonight. So, again, I need to go back and watch it because I really saw very little of the game. And I apologize for that. But yeah, it's been fun. And it's been the one. Yeah, I mean, there's just been the Pelicans, you know, they showed you something in the first game in New Orleans, but it's looking like, I mean, Golden State is, I mean, I know we'll get to it, but Golden State's looking really tough getting Steph back, and they're going to be tough. I mean, you picked Golden State to go to the finals. I picked Houston. And your bet is looking good. Interesting, though, and I've been talking a lot, so I'll throw it back to you, but interesting point about the Eastern Conference. It's looking like neither of the teams we picked will make it to the finals. And this is before this round.
Yeah.
You picked the Sixers, I picked the Raptors, and I think we're not going to get either of those teams even advancing into the Eastern Conference Finals, so. Anyways, I've been chatting it up.
Yep.
Your turn. Why don't you take over?
Well, I've certainly had some opening thoughts on that series, and I pretty much mirrored much of it. It was a very entertaining series, and it is a real shame. I think I am ultimately learning why young teams rarely ever make a run. Like, and I didn't, Celtics are a young team too, to be fair. You mentioned that to me off air, but the Sixers getting this kind of hype, and I'm like, yeah, but they're not really battle tested. They haven't really had a lot of adversity throughout the season, except for, you know, maybe the regular season you could say that was adversity, but they don't have a lot of playoff experience, and that really showed. I think they made some crucial mistakes in games 2 and 3 that really put them in a bad spot. Game 2, for example, they were very quick to jump to shoot the 3-point shot when the Celtics were on a momentum run. You know, even just dribbling out the clock more might have helped, especially at the end of the second quarter. I think had they been able to settle their nerves down, perhaps things could have played out a little differently in that game. But it's all part of learning. Like every team I've ever seen, even the Bulls back when they were good, They had to get through the Pistons for a while before they could become an NBA Finals champion over and over and over and over and over and over. But they still had to face some teams that to get there first. So I don't think the Sixers are going to be any different. I mean, they could. I'm not surprised, though, that they won tonight. And I honestly wouldn't even be surprised if they won the next game. And so take that for what it's worth, but I just think that the Sixers have been valued by the casinos as being such a good favorite. And I'm, you know, it's really surprising when you see a team like that favored by 7 on the road in the playoff game, but they were. Maybe it was a 4-point favorite, but even a 4-point favorite for a team that, as I mentioned, is very, very young, it definitely catches your attention. And so I wouldn't be surprised if the Sixers and Celtics were playing a game 6 on Friday. I could see it. I could absolutely see it. Both teams are young. I think the Seas are going to have their own version of maybe some lulls along the way. Or it could even happen in the next round. But I'll say this. I think Brad Stevens has done an amazing job with a shorthanded team like this, putting themselves up 3 games to even the one. That is so good. I mean, no other coach could do what he's doing right now in this playoffs field. I mean, even Greg Popovich would have I don't know if he would be able to take this team this far. I mean, he has really done, Stevens has really done some remarkable work here.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I'm excited. I'm obviously a huge Stevens fan. A couple of other points before we move on about this series. One, a quick one is, and this will lead into the next one, is I'm a little surprised that we haven't seen
Fultz,
thank you. I'm losing it.
I'm thinking Fultz, right? Yeah,
Markelle Fultz, yeah. And just even to, I mean, I assume he didn't play at any point in the fourth quarter tonight, like they didn't get him in. Just to get his feet wet, and you talk about, and this, the thing that's, you know, triggered this in my memory, in my mind, was you talk about young players and they need seasoning, and which is something I totally agree with. Why not get this guy on the floor? And, you know, you're down 3-0. What do you have to lose? I mean, really, get this guy some playing time. And, you know, at the very least, you know, you can, you know, maybe he fires up the crowd a little bit. So I'm shocked he hasn't played. I mean, I really am. And then tied into that is just, you know, where we are is, you know, with these two teams. I mean, you know, in the draft last year, the Celtics and Sixers make a trade between, you know, you know, Celtics trade the number one pick overall to the Sixers for the third pick in the draft and another number one. And the Celtics take Tatum and the Sixers take Fultz. And so far that's worked out in favor of the Celtics. You know, it's still early, though, and Fultz could come back and be a superstar, and it wouldn't surprise me if that happened. But the bigger point is just that I think this is going to be an interesting rivalry for years to come, because you look at the way the East is right now, and Toronto, I mean, even though they're good now, and the one seed, you know, their window's kind of closing, you know. And I would say the same thing about the Cavs. And, like, you know, even if LeBron comes back next year, he's going to be 35. And, like, how many more years can they realistically do this? And like you pointed out, Celtics and Sixers are extremely young. My average age for the Celtics is 25 and a half years. For the Sixers is 25.8 years. So they're very close. Very young teams, though. And they have really good young talent. And I just feel like, you know, if you told me Eastern Conference Finals next year, Celtics Sixers would, I mean, it wouldn't shock me. Would it shock you, Dave? I mean, granted, there's a lot that has to happen before now and next June, but I could totally see that happening. So so it's in a lot of ways, this series is kind of a, you know, it's sort of a, you know, it's a prologue to what's to come, in my opinion.
No, it's exciting, isn't it? Like, you must be so thrilled as a fan to see that the future of the Celtics can be very bright, and they're doing this without Irving and Hayward. Hayward? Is that right?
Hayward,
yeah.
The two highest paid players on the team.
Yeah. So, and, you know, Phillies can still has enough cap room to get some free agents of their own. I mean, imagine, I don't want to go, I'm not going to even touch LeBron. Like, he's too much of an enigma for me to even attempt to try to project. But say they got Paul George. Now, how much would he help that team? I think I heard that on The Ringer already. But still, it's a good choice. Like, they could actually improve their team. You certainly hope that they don't do it in a way that that disrupts the chemistry that they have, because they have great chemistry at this point. You see more of Fultz next year. I absolutely see these two as the front-running favorites for the East Final. Odds-wise, it's probably going to be whatever team LeBron is on and then these two teams, but I still think that these two teams are going to be the teams to beat next year in the East. Hopefully. We'll see that, if, you know, as long as everybody stays healthy.
Yeah, the Sixers have the fifth most cap space next year. And I think, I'm trying to remember who's, I know Amir Johnson and Redick are coming off the books. So, they may want to keep Redick. I would assume they would. I mean, I think he's a great fit for their team. But, yeah, they have tons of cap space, so they could look quite different next year. If they do go after a Paul George or a LeBron, I'm still kind of on the fence. I think you can make LeBron work on that team, but he can make him work on any team. But is that the best? Is it the best match? I don't know. But anyways, yeah, it'll be fun to watch. And I think, like I said, I feel like we're looking at the future of the NBA Eastern Conference. For the next few years.
And that's a great call. That's a great sign, because even though it had looked so useless for so long, the Eastern Conference could actually be pretty good for years to come. And that's important. Not just having one team that's dominant, having two or three, that makes all the difference in the world. And I think these two teams, even though it doesn't look at from the series scoreboard, the game scoreboard of each game in the series shows that these two teams truly have a lot left in the tank long term. And so that's awesome to see. I will say that Brett Brown, we were talking about people were talking about how good of a coach he was. And maybe he's not that good. Because, like, leaving Embiid out of the overtime, like, what is that? Like, that didn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, why would he hold him back?
Yeah, I feel like he's had some head scratchers. I don't want to see him bad. I mean, I still think he's a good coach, and he's still young, and this is his first time in the playoffs. You know, he's like one of those young guys in the playoffs too. You know, he's going to make mistakes, and so you cut him a little slack. If I'm Philly, I'm not panicking based on what's transpired in the series. And look, he's got him this far already. And
that's very true.
I think he can overreact to what happens in the playoffs. I really do. And he's had some problems. I totally agree. That was strange. That was game two, right? When he took Embiid down in the fourth quarter.
I thought it was three because they were in the overtime. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. You're right. My bad. Yeah, that was strange, and I'm not sure. And, like, almost he wasn't even out that long. He was out, like, for, like, a minute or so. So it was really strange, and Embiid was yelling at him, and it was an odd situation.
Yeah, oh, very.
And
yeah.
And people got on Brett Brown in the fourth quarter of game three when he didn't call timeouts. And the Celtics that was when the Celtics got back into it. And I don't know. I mean, I'll cut him some slack. You know, I feel like, he's done an okay job, and I wouldn't be looking to replace him.
No. I mean, I think you'd have to be a real fool to really advocate replacing him now. It's so early in the game, like, for as far as their franchise is concerned. So, We will look at game five in a couple days, and on our next report we'll see who wins. We'll see if they're still playing even. I think by the time we get to the next show, the series should be over, because I think any game seven would be scheduled for the weekend. So I guess we have that to look forward to if it gets that far. So we'll see. That's probably, unbelievably, that's got the best chance of making a game seven, because all these other ones are done. I think the Cavs-Raptors series is over. You were hoping the Raptors would win a game. I think you want to see them win a game just for themselves, just to prove that they have some worth in the playoffs, because it has been a complete letdown from this team, and it's very frustrating when you see the same thing happening over and over, and it's a bad reflection of the conference too. I mean, what does it say about the rest of the conference if they are the team that ended up with a one seed and this is what they give you in the playoffs? I mean, it was just very, 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 very shocking to see them blow game one, which we talked about already on the show. But then game two may have been, in a way, more disturbing because you would think that being losing a game like that, you'd be so fired up. You would win the next game by 30 points. But it was quite the opposite. After leading for a little bit early, it just didn't look like they were in it. Like, they just had no way. They just did not look like they were ready to go. They were completely unprepared for game two. LeBron took over, and the Cavs won by a lot of points in Toronto. Game three, this one was a particularly frustrating because I had scratch on Cleveland to lay the points. They were up by as many as 16 points in the third quarter, and the Raptors kept chipping away with 3-point shots and other outside baskets. They had the game tied, and LeBron just goes there and does a runner and then wins the game anyway at the buzzer. So it's like, well, what was the point of that? You know, it just all you did was make people angry who had the Cavs against the spread. I mean, they really are just fooling. They really are just being bullies to Toronto at this point. They're just toying with them now. And I realize that's a very embarrassing moment for the Raptors franchise because, you know, I know that you have certainly been a proponent of theirs. You have championed their new movement. And to see this, especially from Lowry and DeRozan, it's really, really, really disappointing and a definite eye-opener. Because, you know, the rub, as we've been talking about, is that people don't really show them on TV and no one gives them any credit. But, I mean, after this, I mean, the spot, you had your TV and the two guys that everyone claims are their superstars. If you're not putting up points in critical moments in game one and two, and you only start chipping away when it just seems like the game was already out of hand in game three, and you still can't finish the game anyway, even after all that, then are they superstars anyway? That's the question. And I don't say that because of just the series. We are talking about the previous 7 years of them on the Raptors. And when you see everything lined up for them to finally make noise in a series like this, a chance to prove that things are different, and they end up doing the same things, that's when you start to really get disappointed and you start to lose your faith in them as star players, as franchise difference makers. Because if you're just throwing up 15 out of 16 misses in a game you had to have at home with the Cleveland Cavaliers as tired as they were. I mean, you literally said before this series started that you thought LeBron looked tired. You literally said that. And they came out and they found a way to win that game? I mean, that's definitely something mental at this point. So I don't know what the solution is, other than to break up the team. But I mean, you just couldn't ask. You could not have asked for worse if you're a Raptors fan in the series. So you know, I'm not really sure what to think anymore. I mean, if they can win today's game, at least it's something. But it's incredible how much of a hit as far as a credible playoff contender took within the course of 7 days.
So there's you just said a mouthful, and there's a lot to unpack. But I got to go back to one of your earlier statements from before when you said LeBron hit a runner in Game Three to win the game. Dave, you did not do that shot justice. That was one of the most incredible finishes I've ever seen.
Well, I'll say that. I mean, you know what? It made it look easy. It did come off the glass. I'll be honest. That was a spectacular shot.
It was incredible. Ananobi guarded him and threw the series about as well as anyone could.
Right, right.
And he was on him on that play, and it was on the left side, came up one-handed, and he banks it off the glass. And I mean, in real time, I'm thinking, okay, no way this is going in. And it just banks off the glass, goes right in, and the buzzer sounds and the game's over. And it was, Dave, that was amazing.
Well, I'll be honest, I undersold that big time. I think I'm just frustrated at the overall outcome of the series. And I'm like downplaying what was probably one of the most visually stunning shots that you'll ever see. But it just it's like, this isn't even fair for Toronto. It's just crazy. Really.
I mean, I'm not a Cleveland fan, obviously, but even I was a little fired up watching that. A couple of other things. And as you pointed out, I don't even know where to start now. Like, as you pointed out, their stars, Toronto's, haven't played like stars. And in fairness, Lowry hasn't been bad. Lowry's been pretty good. DeRozan's been bad. To the point where in game three, in the second half, he was on the bench. And I think he shot like 3 for 9 or 3 for 10 or something like that. And Casey did not put him back in. And he was on the bench watching, and Casey took criticism for that. And I was like, look, I mean, you know, he's trying to win the series. DeRozan's been killing him. So I didn't have a problem with that. But you're right. You know, it's like at a certain point, and I was a skeptic. I was like, okay, like, I think there's a different Raptors team. And, you know, I thought, if they're ever going to win it, this is the year. And boy, was I wrong. Couple other things. On the Cavs side, I mean, yeah, LeBron's been transcendent. I mean, he's just been amazing. I mean, amazing throughout the playoffs. The other thing, too, is just we've seen the reemergence of Kevin Love. I mean, this series, not including tonight's game, he's been... Yeah, he's averaged 19 points a game versus, I think he shot in the first series who did they play? Miami, right?
Not Miami. Cavs, they played Indiana.
Yeah, Indiana. He shot like 6, he had 6.7 points per game. I mean, I just think for once he's actually like, maybe he's healthy again, and you forget how good this guy can be as a real stretch four. You know, he's kind of like the ultimate stretch four, and that he can do it all. He's a good rebounder. He was an elite rebounder in his days in Minnesota, but he's still a good rebounder and an excellent perimeter shooter. And so we'll see. I mean, I feel like he's been like the difference, you know, getting back to, you know, tired and LeBron playing 82 games, LeBron did say after the Pacers series, I'm burnt. And I'm not making this up. He literally said this. He said, I'm burnt. I'm tired. I don't want to think about the next series. And I took that as, wow, okay, Toronto's in good shape. I mean, the Cavs just had a hard-fought 7-game series against Indiana. And I figured, okay, you know, Toronto, this is Toronto's time. And boy, that I misread that post-game interview with LeBron, because he has not, at no point in this series has he looked tired to me. And I mean, if anything, he's playing as well as he ever has. And so hats off to him, man. Oh, man, he just made a sweet pass to Love under the basket. Anyway, so, yeah, I mean, it's just – and then in all ways, like, you know, like the guys you forget about, like Tristan Thompson's had a really great series, and he looks, like, rejuvenated and Love. And it's almost coming back to, like, the original Cavs who you know, beat the Warriors a few years ago.
Yeah.
2 years ago. I mean, you're almost feeling like, well, Tristan's back to normal and Love's playing well and – you know, it's not so much about the three guys they got at the trade deadline this year.
And so, J.R. Smith has had some good games too, right? I mean,
J.R. Smith too, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're a good point, yep. I mean, J.R. just hit a huge three.
Oh, did he really?
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, Cleveland looks very dangerous, and I said I'd never do this, but I'll never doubt them again as long as LeBron's on that team. And, you know, if they're back in the finals playing the Warriors, there we go. You know, it's what everyone thought it, you know, back in October. And And, we come back full circle. What is this, 4 years in a row? It'd be like Cavs-Warriors. Is that right?
Yeah. It would be the fourth year in a row of that matchup because it was 15, 16, 17. This was 2018. Yeah, so if it happens again. Now, there are some friends of mine who are saying if it's Celtics-Cavs in the East, they're going to root hard for the Celtics because they're tired of seeing the Cavs in the finals all the time. And the Warriors, too, for that matter. You know, Chris, I cannot do that. That is not going to happen. So, as I thought in my head, I'm like, I'd rather see the Cavs win five more championships than see the Celtics win one more.
So, understood. No, I get it. I don't blame you.
Yeah. And I mean, I like the Celtics team. I'm just saying, like, just as a principle, like, I can't. I can never put myself in a position to actively root for the Celtics. It has to be a rare case. And we haven't reached that point yet. I mean, it could be a good series even, but I'm just really, what I was hoping for is that it wouldn't come to that, but it's getting pretty close to inevitable at this point. As you can see, the Cavs are now up 63-47 with a second left, and who knows what the second half brings, but it does appear one way or another they will advance. So I got
to bring it back to you one more thing about LeBron. This is the guy you don't want on the Lakers next year, right?
I'm staying with my... I'm not backing down now. Look, I know that it's gotten me into some bad LOL Daves, vid mush, vid smileys and everything, but I don't care. I'm staying with my guns on this one. He looks great right now, but would it surprise anybody if he goes to the next team, whoever that next team is, he breaks down completely, gets an ACL, and then he misses like an entire season. You know, he just...
Dave, he's never been hurt. Ever. Never, ever. It's so, yeah, true. It would surprise me.
It is true, but I've said it 100 times. I've seen it with other players. Once it starts, it just goes way downhill. And I'm just like, that moment... Now, look, he might be a first in professional athletics where he just plays great the whole career and he never really falls off that much. And he is playing spectacular basketball right now. There's no question about it. And he's doing everything he can to stay that way. And I think the closest thing we have to somebody who's just never fallen off is your boy Tom Brady, who is still getting it done all these years later. And I realize that things have changed as far as the NFL is concerned. But in terms of Brady himself, he's still performing at a high level. Well, that's the case.
I mean, there's a commonality there, and Brady and LeBron are both like nuts about fitness and diet and all kinds of stuff, and they take care of themselves in the off season. And I don't know. I mean, look, injuries especially in football, can happen for freak reasons, and you just can't control that. Basketball too, but to a lesser extent. But LeBron is just a freak. He is absolutely a freak of nature. And some guys are, more prone to injuries. LeBron is not one of those guys. And I don't know. He would never go to the Celtics. I mean, he likes Brad Stevens. He has a lot of respect for him. He talks about Stevens a lot, but he would never play for Boston. I'd love to have him on the Celtics. So even at this stage, and even, look, every player you sign, Dave, is a risk,
That's true. Look, I think... I've gone so far with this, I can't back down now. I look like a fool, but look.
No, I had to come after you for that, though.
he's putting me in an impossible position right now. I mean, this is definitely making making my projection much more difficult. But look, I'm going with 200 years of history of professional sports. So I tend to like my odds over the course of a 5-year period, but we'll see. I mean, look, I'm not taking anything away from what he's doing this year. He's been unbelievable. Like, he's been really great. And if there's any case, if anybody had any doubt about him being one of the five best NBA players of all time, some are even making the case of him being one of the top two. I think you can make that case. Yeah. I think he is a better player all time than Kobe. And to say that is really a big statement. But think about it. He's taken teams that have had nothing around him. And whether he adds drama to it or not, he really takes whatever team he's on and makes him a winner. And my only comment to him foreseeable future is let the GM do his job. Like, that's my only comment. Stop trying to engineer your own teams. Like, you know what? Get lost with that. Like, you're not a good GM. You suck at GMing. Go play. Be a player. Let the GM do the GMing, you know? And that's probably my only hope as far as whatever team he gets to next. Unless it's Cleveland, then they'll just do his same stuff. But if it's a different team, let the team run the team and play. Just be a player. That's my only advice. Other than that, I really don't have a lot of issues with what he brings in the court. The between game stuff we've already talked about, so I won't get into that again. But he's the best. He is the greatest in the game, and he's just doing an amazing thing. Like you said, it's the passing, it's the defense, it's these clutch shots. I mean, he is doing everything. In this series and the series before it. So, I mean, he's really taking it to another level, and that's why most people most people we know who follow the NBA still pick LeBron, and it is fair to make that point. You know, never count out the heart of a champion, and he is that. So, look, he's doing a great job, and so at this point, I don't know what to do. I mean, assuming they win the series, Celtics, I mean, that's going to be a tough assignment for Brad Stevens and company. We'll see how that one goes. But
yeah, definitely.
Let me ask you this, Chris, because I know a lot of people are fatigued over seeing the same two teams in the finals all the time. Would you be disappointed in a Warriors-Cavs final? I mean, that just seems like a lot of fun. Like, I think LeBron at the peak of his game versus a team that's also finding its stride at the right time. I mean, I think the issue, which many people have raised, and I get it, is that it makes the regular season completely useless now. Like, what was the point of the regular season? I totally understand that criticism, because I would have a similar criticism. Then what was the point? Like, why did I even watch the other 6 months of the season if this is all that's going to happen? They're just not going to play, and then they're just going to turn it on like that. Then there's no point in me even watching. Like, why would we even do the other 6 months of our NBA report? We could have just been on vacation or, you know, gone out to fancy restaurants during that time. You know what I mean?
Well, I have to go where there's a kids menu, first of all. So I don't go to fancy restaurants anymore, Dave. But I'll if you want to do that next year, I will live vicariously through you. Maybe you do a food podcast and you can report back to me on some good eating in
LA.
That
would be fun, yeah. A food podcast has always been on my mind.
I have to go where they have crayons on the table. You know what I mean?
But, don't sell them short, though. There's some good ones. I mean, you know, they used to have Macaroni Grill. That was awesome back in the day, but a couple of years ago. But
I totally agree with your point. It's like that would be the – no, would I be disappointed? No, it would be fun. It would be great. It would be good theater. You get number four. There's a rivalry there. I mean, look, Draymond Green against LeBron. I mean, you know, get your popcorn ready, you know?
Right.
But you're right. It's just like, well, what's the point, you know? And then this year particularly, I don't even know if you can say, Cleveland took the season off. I really think they were playing their hardest all season. I mean, look, LeBron played 82 games. Not like he sat out 10 games like he often does. And so, in a way, that's not like an accurate picture of what happened necessarily. And same thing for Golden State. You know, Golden State, I don't think they were like, I don't think they let the pedal, you know, let their foot off the pedal. I think, look, Steph has been banged up all season, and he didn't play, I don't know, last 10, 15 games of the season, and he was out.
Right.
And, you know, they were dealing with injuries and such. And so, the Golden State's biggest problem, and you pointed out early, was the bench hasn't been as good as it has been in past years. And Iguodala and Livingston aren't the same players they once were. And, in past years they've had, you know, arguably the best bench. And this year it's taken a step back. And they had re-signed these guys. And maybe that was a mistake. But anyways, I wouldn't be disappointed because it'd be great and it'd be exciting and there'd be storylines galore. But I do, part of me does want to see some fresh teams in there. Like, if Houston or Boston were to make it, I'd be very happy. Just to see, something new and some new fans and someone else gets a thrill.
I would be very interested to see if Houston actually did make the finals. And that's a convenient segue because we're going to talk about their series next. There's literally nothing to say. I mean, they just overwhelmed the Jazz. There was one game where, as you speculated, they might have been tired and they lost game two. Other than that, it's just been completely, it's been all Rockets. It's been all Rockets in this series. I mean, they are up 3-1. And the three wins haven't been close. I mean, they won one by 30-something points, and I think they won the last game by at least 25. I mean, they've been dominant. But not when you say dominant, you know, traditionally you're thinking, oh, man, they really own the paint. They have had great post-up play. But with this team, dominant means that they're just canning so many three-point shots. And they've been doing that. They've been getting some inside play by driving to the basket, but it's been a lot of shots, a lot of outside shots, and James Harden just getting awkward looking off balance shots and making them, and that's his game, and that game has worked to his advantage against a shorthanded Jazz team. So here it is, 3-1. They're going to go back to Houston tomorrow, and we'll see if Houston can finish the deal. Probable cause that they do, right? And that's about all I have to say. I mean, it's pretty much just me looking ahead to the next series because the Rockets were just too much. It's just too much. And I think they've done a great job not lollygagging. I think that's important. I think they took care of business. And if they continue on this path and if they win tomorrow or today as you listen to the podcast, I think they've done a tremendous job. I think even though that says, why is that a tremendous job to win a series convincingly against a clearly inferior opponent? The answer is because, number one, they're not a clearly inferior opponent. That's a good team. But number two is because it's so easy to lose your focus when you get a matchup that's perceived to be an easy matchup because maybe one guy's hurt. In this case, it's Rubio. If you take care of business and take care of the series quickly, that does so many things for you to prep you for the next stage. And so I give the Rockets a lot of credit this round. Definitely done a great job. But you know what, having said that, Chris, I don't think they've really shown me anything different than I already know. The only thing that's different that I haven't seen in past years, James Harden teams, is that their defense has been a lot better. And I think Clint Capella has just been incredible, really good. And same for, even Harden's been doing pretty well defensively. So in my view, I think that's the one thing that's improved, but everything else is all the same stuff I'm used to. Like, oh, they take a lot of three-point shots, and they drive to the hoop, they don't pass the ball, all the stuff we were talking about last week. They really haven't indicated, shown me anything to show that, to prove to me that they can be ready for a war that they will get when they play Golden State. And that's my real problem with the Rockets right now. It's that, you know, they're doing a good job, but They need to show me that they can tough out a game, that they can win a game when the other team answers. And I just haven't seen it yet. Because they either win every game by 30, which, again, you can't criticize the team for winning a game by 30 points. But my point is, anytime they do get a challenge, it just seems like, okay, we'll just lose a game. And they just lose. So I want to see a battle. I want to see them have a game like the Sixers had against the Celtics. I want to see them have a game like the Indiana Pacers had against the Cavaliers what game was that? Game two? Whatever game it was. And I want to see a battle like the Raptors had with the Cavs in game one and ultimately lost, but they did have the battle. So I want to see them battle. Like, they are not battling they're not battling. They're just kind of just winning, and I don't feel like they've proven to me that they can take a challenge and battle out the challenge and win the challenge. So this jury's still out with them, but for this particular series, they're doing a great job. So that's my ultimate takeaway. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you just said. I wish Ruby had been healthy, because I just feel like Utah has not been able to replace him. I mean, Dante Exum and, just hasn't really filled the bill. There's something like Royce O'Neal has been okay, but, Rubio adds that little something. I mean, first of all, on the ball pressure, defensively, he's an elite defender. I'm not saying he would have stopped Harden, but he might have slowed him down a little bit. One thing that jumps out at me, and this is kind of interesting, is how consistent they are, the Rockets, that is. And in this series, just in terms of like how they're scoring, Harden's 30.5 points per game, Paul 20.5, and Capella's 15. If you look at the Wolves series in round one, Harden was 29, Paul was 19, and Capella's 15.8. I mean, it's almost like they kind of follow a template in terms of how many. You're going to score this many points. You're going to have this many shots.
Yeah.
I mean, it's remarkable. I mean, granted, we're looking at a small sample, but you don't have the, you're not seeing that like fluctuation like you are, like for the Celtics, for example, where guys are just up and down. I don't know. I mean, part of that too is just like Harden's going to have a lot of shots and Paul's going to get the second most, but it is kind of interesting to me. But yeah, you pointed out Capella's been unbelievable, and on the defensive side, and I love seeing this. I love on the big stage, a guy like this who, many would describe as a role player, coming up with big plays and big stops, and so, I'm in total agreement. Like, let's just get out of this round. And get to Rockets, Warriors. Everyone wants to see that, and move on. Second round's been a dud. Let's face it. And so, let's see some good basketball.
Yeah, could not agree more. It goes back to last year where every series was decisive and every game was a blowout. It was just the worst playoffs you could imagine. And this round is a taste of that. I mean, it's really too bad, but I'm ready to go too. I'm ready to move on. I'm like, Rockets, just finish it already. Let's move on. We clearly know you're the better team. Let's do it. Same for the Warriors. I felt like the Pelicans would gain game three because the home pop's always in effect. But then when they went to game four, I was thinking, well, I don't know what to do with that. I think, Pelicans, what happened? Once I saw the highlights of game three, I'm like, oh, the Pelicans killed them. And then I looked at the highlights like, well, this guy shot a three, and this guy shot a three, and this guy shot a three, and this guy shot a three. And not only were guys shooting threes, I know Holiday was shooting threes, and Rondo was shooting occasional threes. I'm like, not only were they shooting threes, it's like, these are guys that don't normally shoot three-pointers. And so I was thinking, well, that's not going to happen again. So I thought, well, I guess the Warriors will win the next one, and then they did. They won it by a lot, too. So, ultimately, the Warriors have proven that they are the team. And I think I thought that the Pelicans might have challenged them with the interior game, but having Steph back, I think, just like you said, that was all the difference in the world. Like, having him back just opens up the floor completely for Golden State. And even without as good a bench as they've had in past years, you're still getting great contributions from him and Clay and KD. KD, I mean, and who could forget about Kevin Durant, one of the top players in the NBA? And, you put it all together, and, I mean, it's just, this is too much. I mean, the Pelicans have two, do I even say two? Let's say one cinch all-star player. and one pretty good player. And then after that, it really drops off in terms of what they bring offensively. So
yeah,
it's just, you know, that's just a mismatch at the end of the day. I mean, I didn't really know if the size advantage would be a factor, but the way that the Warriors play, I'm seeing that it really isn't. So let me get your feel for this series or what's left of it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I look at, you know, is just the point differential. In the three games the Warriors won, they won by an average of 22 points. I mean, the Pelicans beat them 121 to 116 in game two. Everything else has been an absolute blowout. And you're right. They have one cinch, all-star, really two, when you consider that Boogie Cousins was on this team up until you know, late in the year when he got hurt in that game against the Rockets. But yeah, it's just been, I mean, just been a dominant, I mean, Golden State's just flexed their muscle, and KD's been a star. He's just showing you why he's one of the most versatile players to ever play the game. And so, yeah, I'm sad that, you know, we didn't get any excitement out of this, that there hasn't been more juice, as you might say. I thought Golden State would win, but I thought New Orleans could put up more of a fight, and we'd have some closer games and some tighter matchups. But unfortunately, that hasn't been the case. And I think, like I said before, let's get ready for round three, conference final. Let's go.
Yeah,
Houston,
I'm ready.
Golden State, and let's see what happens.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's about it. I mean, and similar to you, I really thought that there would be a real, like a genuine challenge from New Orleans, but they figured it out. I don't think that's a knock on the Pelicans at all. I just think that the Warriors have really been able to just overwhelm. I mean, I don't know about overwhelm, but the Warriors have figured out how to play these guys, and they've done a remarkable job. And I'll be honest, I haven't really seen a lot of this series. I've seen part of Game 2, which was a good game, and I saw the highlights of Game 3. I did not see Game 4. I did not see Game 1. But you know, to me, it's just a simple talent advantage. It's just like you have a bunch of guys that can score. We already rolled them out, like a four or five guys that can give you at least 15 points in a given, at least 15 points on a given night. And then you throw in Steph Curry just jacking up threes and making them from 50 feet. You know, I'm like, well, what are you going to do about that? I mean, only, you know, Anthony Davis can only do so much. I mean, he can certainly take over a series when it's up for grabs, but fewer of these games have actually been up for grabs. So, yeah, I kind of thought that was a bad... So the Game 3 win was, in a weird way, a bad sign. Because, like, once I saw that, they were really not doing it with the... they were really not doing it with the glass. They were doing it more with the three-pointer. I'm like, well, they don't really... They're not really known for shooting threes. So I didn't see that as being sustainable. And so that's definitely the disappointment of it. I thought they would have more of an advantage inside. I should go look and see, like, statistically what the points in the paint were for the series. I'll look into that. Let me get that information.
Here's an interesting one, though. Looking at Curry's numbers just for this series, he's shooting 43% from the floor, 42.9 from three.
What were they? How much?
So his field goal percentage is, his overall field goal percentage is 43.1.
Mm-hmm.
His three-point field goal percentage is 42.9. He's come back, and he basically hasn't missed a beat.
That is amazing. Yeah, he really hasn't. It's like he didn't get hurt. He has really bounced back, and that was the worst news for New Orleans. The worst news. Like, you were thinking, oh, maybe he'd come back. He might be a little rusty, and I think it was, what was it, Game 2, the game he came back? Yeah. Or was it game? Maybe it was Game 1. And it was like, yeah, nah, this isn't good for New Orleans. I mean, he was at the top of his game. Like, he really did look.
It was game two.
It was game two. Okay, yeah. And he was sharp. Yeah. Like, he was sharp. Like, I mean, that was definitely, I mean, it's a very exciting moment, certainly for an NBA fan. But if you're a fan of the team that's trying to beat them, it gives you a little pit in your stomach, right?
Absolutely.
I want to see what
the other thing.
Oh, go ahead. Yep.
Yeah, the other interesting stat in my mind for the series, the leader in assists for Golden State. Just take a wild guess. Who do you think it is?
The leader in assists. It Zaza Pachulia? No. I'm just fooling around.
Close.
Oh, really? Was it JaVale McGee? Swaggy P? Draymond Green?
Draymond Green.
Oh, okay, Draymond Green. Yeah, that makes sense. See, that one that makes sense. That makes sense. I can see that.
10.3 assists per game in the series.
Wow, that's pretty good.
That's surprisingly high, isn't it?
It is, because usually you would think a guard would do that, but... But I have seen him at the high post a lot in the series, so maybe that isn't so surprising, because he's at the position to be able to bring in a lot of assists. And yeah, you might even think that Durant would do it, but he's more of a off-ball scorer anyway, so I don't know. I guess it is surprising, yeah, I must say. Chris, I got this for you. Are you ready for this? Okay, so points in the paint, game three. New Orleans had 54 points in the paint, and Golden State had 36. They actually are owning the points in the paint, and they're still losing. That was game three. Wait. That was game three that they won. Okay, sorry. Let me get to the next game. One sec. How do I get to the next game here? I'm in the ESPN thing. Oh, here we go. Okay, game four. Okay, so that was game three. The only game that they won, right? Here's game four. The next game, the very next game in New Orleans. Points in the paint. You had... What? I think it's pretty close to the same. It says here that the New Orleans Pelicans had 52 points in the paint, and the Warriors at 36 in game four. Unless that's just the entire series. Maybe it is the entire series. I don't know. But either way, that is... That's not encouraging. I mean, they're actually owning the points in the paint. It doesn't make any difference. I guess that's not good. Now, if I look at it here, points in the paint for game one, which Golden State won pretty handily, 48 points for Golden State, 50 for the Pelicans. The point is, it's not making a difference. I just think the offensive depth is just way more on the Golden State, and it's really as simple as that. I mean, I think they can only defend so many guys at one time. They had Jrue Holiday and they had Rajon Rondo taking down two guys, but not only is it more than two guys, but it's a bunch of guys, and they're not always in the same place all the time. They're moving around, so I think it's always going to be a challenge for a team, but. I think they can't use that same matchup to work to their advantage this time around. So it's, I wish that I could have more to explain it, but I just think it's just they have more better players than the Pelicans do. I mean, it's simplistic, but I think that's pretty much what we have. I'm ready to go. I'm done. First, second round, it's over. I think that's the last we speak of this, you think? Unless we might have a game seven or a game six recap. I mean, do you think any of these series go six games? I guess that's my first question.
No.
No, okay. So I feel similarly. So that's that. Get me to the next round. Yeah, I'm with you, Chris. Let's do it. Next round. Let's do it. I guess that's it. I mean, I thought maybe we could talk about... I don't want to talk about Stan Van Gundy today, but... Look.
About what?
Stan Van Gundy.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. All right, there are we'll a few coaching it. Openings.
Go ahead. We have a lot of extra time tonight. Let's talk about it. I mean, look, he tried to do the home run play, and all he did was saddle the Pistons with impossible cap room issues. So good for him. He's just ruined the franchise for the next 3 years with the Blake Griffin trade. They're never getting out of that. That's going to be a giant hole in the ground for a while. So yeah, I mean, I would think and he's like, can I have more control of the team? And the Pistons are like, how about no? You know, so he's out. And so a couple of decisions. Who will decide? Who will take the chance on Van Gundy, who is a good coach, just not a good GM? And what will the Pistons do to replace him and try to get back to being a competitive team again?
Yeah, I mean, he'll definitely get him a shot, and he can go into broadcasting with his brother for a while if he doesn't right away. You're right. That Pistons job is not going to be very desirable, is it? I mean, that is a big old mess.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be it's not going to be a quick turnaround there. And in my opinion, it's going to get worse before it gets better. Because when you think about it, they were kind of on the cusp of making the playoffs. I mean, were they the ninth best record in the East?
It was ninth and maybe tenth for a moment, but they're only within three games of a playoff spot at the time of the trade, and then they tanked. Yeah. So completely backfired.
Yeah, I don't know. That'll be interesting to watch, because there's a number of openings right now. And one thing that fascinates me, and this is one point I just wanted to get to real quickly, is that the Knicks were quick to hire David Fizdale, which I think is a good hire. It's a solid hire. Versus like last year when they kind of sat on their hands and they fired Phil after the draft. So they let him, they let him go through the draft, and then I think the following week they fired him, didn't they? And then they hired a coach after they signed Hardaway Jr. So they really did things backwards, but this year they're much more proactive. Or no, they hired a new GM, not a coach. They actually signed Hardaway Jr. after they fired Phil, but before they hired his replacement. And so it's interesting that this year they were much more on the ball. They fired Hornacek and almost immediately hired Fizdale. And then there was a story that and Fizdale, I think, is a good hire. You know, he comes from the Pat Riley coaching tree, which I guess means something. And he was a coach with Miami all those years with LeBron, and he started a relationship with LeBron, and there might have been a story in one of the New York papers. The Knicks are hopeful that they can use Fizdale to bring LeBron to New York, which I thought was pretty humorous. At any rate, the other openings are Charlotte, I think. Isn't Charlotte, Orlando fired Frank Vogel, so he's out there, and there's an opening there. Maybe San Van Gundy goes back to where he started. Milwaukee, the interesting one is Milwaukee's been interviewing, I think it was Becky Hammon, and she's an assistant with the Spurs, and she's been a candidate for their coaching job to replace Prunty, who apparently is still the interim coach.
It takes some thinking. They're like, wait, did they have who is their coach? And it's like, yeah.
Joe Prunty.
Yeah. So, wait, saying that the Bucks were close to hiring Ham as the coach, but the thing is, they may have already hired the first ever female coach in the NBA, right? Wasn't that what Prunty?
Ouch. Church lady. I just think it would be interesting. They're not close to hiring her. There's been stories that they have actually interviewed her, which is a big step.
Right.
I don't think that's ever happened.
True. There's another big coaching story, a really big coaching story. Phoenix is not an opening, actually, because they hired the first, who was a Croatian, Serbian, somebody. It was a very big story. It really blew up on my social media. But let me go look it up, because unfortunately, it was
Igor
days
Kos- ago. Kukasov.
Igor Kukasov. The
we'll get it next year, Dave.
Well, yeah, that's pretty crazy. So, I mean, it's not that crazy to hire a guy who happens to be from a country that hasn't had a head coach before, but why not? You know, that's my opinion of that. I mean, why not? I think it's worth a. I think that's going to be, you know, you couldn't do much worse, right? I mean, no, I shouldn't say it that way, but like, in other words, you could do much worse. That's what I meant to say. You could do a lot worse.
Yeah.
Way worse. I mean, believe me, I can rattle off several worse names out there who could take over. So I say go for it. Now, I think he was an assistant with the Utah Jazz at the point that he was hired. So he will be the first NBA head coach born and raised outside of North America. Wow, that's an even bigger story than I thought. The first foreign head coach ever. Now, that's a surprise to me. I actually thought, yeah. I didn't realize that was the first foreign coach of any kind. That's really big news.
That's interesting because we've had foreign-born general managers, which is not a coach. Interesting.
That is, absolutely. I thought that we might have had one in the past, like many, many decades in the past. So certainly quite an interesting story. He is from, as mentioned, he is Serbian. Oh, it was mentioned, but I don't think I mentioned exactly which one it was. But yeah, he is Serbian. And it says here from ESPN News Services that he greatly appreciates the opportunity that the people in the Suns front office have given him. That's really awesome. I wish him the best of luck. He's going to need it because this team is terrible. They're going to need more than a coach. They're going to have to get some serious improvement in the general manager position. So that's where it starts, really. But assuming that they get their act together in that end, I think we'll see, right?
Yeah, that is a team full of lottery picks, and
yep.
So, you know, and he had that reputation in Utah. He like coached a few guys up, like a lot of guys gave him credit. So maybe that was the thinking there. It's worth noting that Fizdale and Budenholzer apparently both turned down that position with the Suns, even though they were offered it, but they both rejected it. So Fizdale, as we said, landed in New York. I wonder what Budenholzer's up to, you know, and wonder where he does he have his eye on a particular job? I know he interviewed with the Knicks as well.
Right.
So, you know, his choices are down to, I guess, Charlotte and Orlando. I guess perhaps Milwaukee. I don't know if he's in an interview there. Maybe he has.
He needs to stay the hell away from Charlotte. That's all I got to say. I mean, that's a disaster. You don't want to be part of that franchise.
Oh, gosh, that's right. Yeah, they did make it official that they hired Mitch Kupchak,
yep.
too.
Oh, no.
As a GM.
That's bad news. Yeah. That is bad news.
Yep.
Oh, man.
So we'll wait and see. I think it's worth mentioning the coaching changes right now because it's kind of an ongoing thing. And I did think the Knicks thing was and the Suns hiring were both interesting ones.
Yeah, I actually am glad that we brought it up because it did remind me of the Suns hiring Ivan, or do I have that right? Yeah, hiring the new coach a groundbreaking new coach from another country. I think that's really awesome to hire a Serbian head coach. There's certainly plenty of very capable Serbian players in the NBA. And I think, and if not Serbia, it's it's neighboring countries that have had a presence here in the association. So I think it's a pretty natural fit in the end. So I'm looking forward to seeing how well he does. And he's got experience. He's not coming in raw. You've seen plenty of coaches. It's really more in baseball. You see this where guys with no managing or coaching experience at all get the job. And some of them actually do pretty well. So
yeah. Yeah, I feel like, I just feel like basketball is so different, though. I don't know. I think it'd be hard to come in with no. Has anyone ever done that? Do you know of anyone who's done that in basketball? No coaching experience. I mean, I know, Steve Kerr. Like,
that's actually
baseball,
the best example. Steve Kerr, he didn't have any.
Of Kerr, dude, that's right.
Yeah, he didn't even have college experience.
That's right. Interesting. Okay. Well, I mean, it can happen.
It could work, but similar to what I was saying about old players, like, you still are talking about over 100 years of history of the NBA that would not be on one side if you came into the NBA as a head coach. Not even just like a coach, like an assistant coach, like a head coach with no prior coaching experience whatsoever. That's the difference. Like that, you're right. That's really, really difficult to make a leap that large. You have to be really, really keen, really smart to be able to succeed without any experience on any level. But Kerr is unique because he really is that wise. Like he's implemented a great system, and as you can see on the court, they're doing really well with it in the 3 or 4 years that he's been there. So kudos to him. Yeah, so it's an exciting time, I think, and some fresh blood entering the coaching ranks. I welcome that because we've had plenty of retreads here that are getting the job done, and we've seen them everywhere, as you know. let's see. Update on from Cleveland. Cavs are up.
It's a 20-point game.
Yeah,
right,
20-point game, 86-66, 3:32 in the third. I mean, I think it's time to stick
a fork. I can't
even
watch this now.
Yeah, this is bad. Well, you got your Predators playing, right? The hockey NHL.
Oh, I forgot about that. Thank you for reminding me. I completely forgot.
They're winning.
Are they? Yeah. And this is in Winnipeg, right?
Yeah. So it's not over, but they're up early. 1-0.
Wow, Washington beat Pittsburgh too?
Yeah, that's it. That. Series is over. The Caps,
amazing,
unbelievably, came in into Pittsburgh, won two games at the whatever the heck the name of the center is over there right now. In Pittsburgh, and they won the series 4-2. So they advance to the Eastern Conference Final, which I think is against Tampa Bay. Yeah, Tampa Bay.
Yep. It's
very different NHL Conference and Stanley Cup Final. I mean, playoffs this year, isn't it? You know,
Blackhawks,
no Penguins. You know, it's very different. No Rangers, you know.
No Anaheim Ducks.
No Ducks. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, very different. The Preds would actually be one of the more decorated teams in the last like 3 or 4 years if they were to advance. But yeah, as we know,
I don't think they're going to advance though, Dave.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. I mean, if they win tonight, that'll help. But yeah, that's going to be tough. Very different though, and in it, the NHL has got a lot of fresh blood. You got a team that you never heard of, we've never seen before, Vegas, which at this point looks like the best team, doesn't it? Don't they seem like the team to beat now? They look really good.
It does. Why do I not like them? What is it about them?
Well,
is it just that they're new, and I don't like the fact that a new team is like, you know, had one of the best records in hockey, and you know they're an expansion team. You know what part of it is? I don't really like Vegas very much. Like, I just don't like the city. Like, it doesn't have any particular, and you know me, I just don't care about gambling.
Mm-hmm.
And, but two, I think I really hate the name of the team.
the
heck is a Golden Knight? What does that have to do with Las Vegas?
No. Listen, close your eyes. Think of a team that's called the Vegas Knights. Vegas Knights. You have a lot of Vegas Knights,
yeah.
Wild Knights. It's a double entendre.
Is that what that is, really?
That's what I think it is. I don't think anyone's spoken about it, but I honestly think that that's the intended effect. It's supposed to be a double entendre. Like, you think, yo, you have a great big night. Another, the Golden. I'm not a fan of them having to add an extra name. Not a lot. If you're going to do two names for a team, the first name has to be one syllable. Red Wings, right? Blue Jackets. Like, those work. But Mighty Ducks was clunky for, like, the better part of 15 years. I'm glad that they got rid of the Mighty part.
And they just went to Ducks.
Yeah, like, that's a lot better. The Ducks, Anaheim Ducks. That's, like, totally sensible. Like, it's a good name. It's a good team. And it's a good franchise, right? But I've always felt that way. Duke has the Blue Devils. It was the Golden Devils. It was like, what? But Blue Devils works. So.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I mean, maybe when I see them in the finals, if they do get to the finals, I'll be okay with it.
Maybe one reason you're not into it is because of Marc-Andre Fleury, who just could not make a save to save his life with Pittsburgh, and now he's just superstar with the Knights. Like, I'm with you. That's kind of blows my mind, too. I'm like, when did this guy get good? Like, what? How is this guy doing this? And so that's been my feeling. But I like the Knights. I think I have a lot of respect for them because they're just so – they're really talented. And like Carlson and Eakin and a bunch of – some of these guys are from other teams before, and they've come together. And I don't know how they did it either. It's just crazy. But I will – I give them – I don't hate them for that reason. And the other reason is because – the fans did not waste any time getting behind them. They have a nice fan base, and at the games, they get really, really loud for their team. And I'm really surprised. Like, this is year one. I can't believe that they're this excited about them already. So I'll give them a lot of credit from that standpoint. Once they start losing, we're going to see how loyal they are, but they've taken it. But they certainly have responded very well to the hot start. And there are plenty of markets that don't do that. I mean, Miami, when they had good teams, their fans were pretty lifeless at the games.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not a given that your fan base is going to be there for you if you succeed. So, but, you know, I saw Jabes had the same comment that he did not respect them. He thought that the NHL cheated to make them good. They probably did. But be that as it may, you still got to win the games. You still got to execute the transactions, and they've done a pretty good job. So, I don't quite have that same. I mean, I'm not on the same boat, but I can respect that comment because it's weird when you don't earn it and you just suddenly end up in the Stanley Cup final. That does seem a little. It is strange. Like, I'm not going to argue with that. Like, I think that's really unusual.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, imagine.
I know. I remember when the expansion draft was going on. A lot of people thought that they were. That Vegas was going to get some pretty premium talent. And turns out they did. They were right. I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury, though, basically Pittsburgh sat him like during the finals, right? I mean, they basically.
Yeah, that's true.
And I mean, he had no future there, obviously. So, you know, I'm like, that's a good story. You know, I'm glad it worked out for him.
Yeah, I mean, good for him. I mean, he had a second chance and he took advantage of it. And I think that in itself is pretty cool. So, good on him, right? So there's that. The coaching is good. And I'm not quite that familiar with the coach yet. But again, it's year one. I mean, I'm going to be. So in the next couple of years, we'll see. But it's funny. I mean, they really just made quick work out of my Kings in the beginning and then the Sharks in this last round. I mean, you're beating these teams pretty handily. I mean, what can you say? I mean, they truly are the better team. So I'm not going to argue that. It's not like the Sharks were a bad team. They were a very fast team themselves. They had some good talent and even good goaltending. Martin Jones is certainly having a nice year. And, jeez, I mean, they made them look pretty useless and feeble. So, I mean, whoever plays them next is going to have a real challenge. But whether it's Nashville or Winnipeg, both of these teams have pretty potent offenses in their own right. So, I don't think Vegas should be penciling in their trip to the Stanley Cup final just yet. I think it's going to be a very, very good West final. The East final I have no read on. I don't know. I don't actually know who to pick in that. It doesn't seem like it's going to be a good defensive final. I mean, the Lightning give up a lot of goals. The Caps maybe give up a little bit less, but I don't think of them as a really great defensive team either, so could be a high-scoring series.
Holpe's a great goalie, though, isn't he? Does he have that reputation?
I gotta be honest. I do have to give him his due, don't I? I mean, look, usually they're good for, like, giving up the goat early in the playoffs. They came into Pittsburgh and won two times on their ice. I mean, that's really good. I think it's time to start giving them a little respect because I gave them no chance, and they're in the East Final against a team that's very porous on the defensive end, meaning Tampa Bay. Their defense is bad. So I think when you factor that into it, Caps certainly would have a chance. I'm not gonna rule them out anymore. I have been for like two rounds in a row. Here, it really is a 50-50 scenario. I think you could go either team. So you're right. Holtby's been playing very well. He plays really well in the regular season anyway. You're right. He's always been a very solid regular season player, but in the playoffs he had been really, really porous. He'd been really bad. But not this time. I mean, these games, like, they won this one 3-2. No. They won this one 2-1, excuse me, in overtime. They have not been giving up that many goals compared to past years. So, I guess... What is the ultimate statement here? The ultimate statement to me is it's wide open. I think you could see any of these remaining teams win it. Wouldn't be surprising at all.
Yeah, I've followed this series more closely than the others, and I've just come away with feeling that the former Atlanta Thrashers, now Winnipeg Jets, are an extremely strong team. I'm really impressed with them, and I don't know. I think they're going to win this series, and I think. I don't know. The next series should be good, but I think they're going to represent the Western Conference.
You know, they really do look good. I mean, I've seen them play all year, going all the way back to November. You know, a couple of matchups because I think they're in our division. No, they're not in the division they're not in the Pacific Division. But the Kings and the Ducks played them plenty of times anyway. And I had nothing but good things to say. And it's funny how that really just came out of nowhere. I'm like, I don't really recognize a lot of the players, but. Whatever they're doing in their minor league system, it's been fantastic. I mean, it's a very, very tough team to play. They are really fast. They can really score. And they're getting good goaltending out of the series, too. So, I mean, out of this entire playoff run. So, my hat's off to them. Would you root for them a little bit because they used to be from Atlanta?
I don't know. I'm still a... I was kind of a Thrashers fan, and I did root for them, and I went to games.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm trying to, like, out of all these guys, I mean, I remember Dustin Byfuglien playing for them, but I don't remember a lot of these guys when they were with Atlanta, though. So I don't have that kind of rooting interest. But, shoot, you know what? If they win, maybe I would. I don't, you know, because it's not like I'm going to root for the Lightning or Washington against them. You know what I mean?
You don't want to root for half the Rangers? That doesn't do it for you? You don't want to?
That's right. Yeah, the Tampa Bay Rangers. Yeah. I'll tell you though, it was fun watching them beat the Bruins.
that was good. I love how on Twitter it got universally. Everybody loved it. They're like, LOL Bruins. Everybody just couldn't stand the Bruins, and they are tough to take. There's no question. You know, I'm not going to argue that.
No disagreement here.
Yeah. I look forward to hearing Ron and Mandy's thoughts on this once I get them back on the show.
You should do a Stanley Cup final show with those guys.
Yeah, I would love that. Do that. I certainly Mike would be up for that. I could get him back, and I think he would have similar thoughts regarding all these teams.
Ron would do it too, wouldn't he?
Ron would absolutely do it. That's a good point. Yeah, we get Ron too. Ron would absolutely be all in on it. He's been following this playoff pretty closely, so he would have a lot to say. That's a great point. So,
I'm a casual hockey fan these days, so I don't have that much to say. They laugh during my analysis of these of these games. So
yeah. Well,
so apologies to them.
No, it's all right. This has certainly been a great playoff, though, and I've had a lot of fun with it. It's so much going on. I mean, I haven't watched every single period of every game in the Cup playoffs, but when I've seen it, it's certainly been very, very entertaining, and I look forward to more of the same. So, how many periods do we have left? Two to go in the Winnipeg game?
Yep.
Okay, yep. So...
It's the end of the first.
And it's still 1-0. In favor of your team, but there's...
But you know what? I've seen leads disappear like nothing in this series. And, you know, that one game where they were winning 3-0 and then they ended up getting blown out.
Right.
I think the final was like 7-4 in that game. So I mean, 1-0. It might as well be. They might as well be losing right now, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Well, it's certainly a lot of fun. So that's it for the two of us. Bring on the conference finals, because we're kind of done with this round too. So we'll be happy to see these come to an end. And certainly in the case of the Celtics, if they can finish the deal on Wednesday, that'll be awesome. Just from the standpoint of the Celtics, it wouldn't be awesome for me, because I really had a lot of high hopes for Philadelphia. But you know, that's just the way it is. You know, you put your hopes on a young team and it really can go 50-50, and it just went the wrong 50. That's it. So no big deal. They'll be back. I'm not worried about that. All right, that's it. So any final thoughts before we sign it off tonight?
No, I mean, I'm like I said, I think none of these series, I predict none of these series go six games, and I'm going to stand by that. That was what we said, right? Six?
Yeah, well, any of them go six, and yeah, I've had a tough time.
The Celtics games automatically, Celtics series automatically won five.
Right.
As is the two Western Conference series.
Right.
So. But I think we're going to, yeah, I think we're going to be into the third round when we talk on next Monday or Tuesday.
All right. In that case, best wishes and have a great rest of your week, Chris. I'll talk to you soon.
Same to you, Dave. Thanks so much. This was fun.
You got it. Same here. All right. Take care. All right. That's our show tonight. Thanks to Chris. Thanks to all of you for listening. We have one speaker. I need to fix that. There we go. You can follow us at DidCow on Twitter or www.didcow.com on the web. I'm Dave Cadena. Have a great rest of your week. Enjoy what's left of this round. And you're soon better round the next time in the conference final. We'll see you next time.